Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate. How are you?
G'day, bud. How are you?
Very good, mate. We've got an apology to give to our female listeners right now, don't we?
What's that? We're going to talk.
We're going to talk footy.
Oh, some of our female listeners are footy mad. Yeah, but some our Melbourne female footy listeners.
But a lot of our female listeners write in and say, don't talk sport, and a lot of the males go, love the sports banner.
True. All right, let's get it out of the way.
Well, since I'm on the bottom of the ladder, I've only got one thing to have a crack at you about. Believe you started the season only scoring 10 points to halftime. At least Fremantle scored 11. So I've been waiting for a couple of weeks to say
we've got 4 points on the board. How many have you got?
Can I get back to you on that?
Yeah, you can get back to me on that. Now, that why are we talking about it in round two? Because we've got a confession. Yeah. The Easter episode, the one before, first round of the year, you would have thought we would have talked footy.
Yeah.
We didn't, did we?
No.
Because
it was Ives' fault. Yeah. She was away.
She was away. We couldn't do it. We don't know what we're doing. We just stand here and talk and sit on the couch and talk.
Yeah.
So, so that's it. So round two, done?
Done.
Yeah.
So I made a really bold prediction that Fremantle's going to win the premiership, and I don't know how they're going to do that. Yeah. So where they are, but no.
I was watching the first half of that game on Friday night, Collingwood-Richmond, and I thought that was 15 playing 14.
Oh.
You know, it was terrible. It opened up in the second half, but it wasn't a good spectacle.
The worst part about Richmond is, you know, they get 3 goals up with 5 minutes to go, and you don't think they've got it.
Yeah.
And any other team would have been happy they won by a point, but it was you guys. That just annoys the dickens out of me.
Oh, well, thanks, Brody. Good job there, mate. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey, I've had a really good week. Some of the listeners might know that we've both got young children. My youngest is on the autism spectrum, so we've had to do a gut healing protocol with him, and it just means torturous sort of early wake-up routines, getting the food prepped. And, mate, last night, a couple of things. I had to do a voiceover for an asbestos commercial for New South Wales government.
Oh, okay.
Over in Richmond. That'll come out shortly. But
That's news.
We won't hear it in Victoria. We'll hear it in New South Wales.
Yeah, okay.
But my wife...
So what did you say? Watch out for it?
Mate, anything built pre-1980s is going to get some help from the New South Wales government. So wow. I can't say anything yet because it's about to go to air on Saturday, Sunday as a radio commercial. The point in telling you that is I was over in Richmond, my wife came over and met me, and we went and had dinner at a place called A Feast of Merit,
yep.
Which is run by Tim Costello's son.
Okay.
And you know Tim Costello from World Vision?
Yes.
So his son has this restaurant, and if you walk in, it's just amazing. It's funky, it's really fit out really well. You'd never know it was a charity. But his thing is, instead of putting a hand out to try and get some cash, I'll run a commercial enterprise and the profits I'll put towards my charitable activities.
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
But the victory in my wife and I being out either, because we've had this restricted diet for 9 weeks now, and just to have some basic food was amazing. Then the simple things, the parents of the listeners of this podcast will understand, and the others won't. Just the simple thought of driving home last night with the thought that I could have a sleep in. I slept until 6:45 this morning. It was just the little things that you have as a parent.
It is very true, very true.
But you can relate.
So are you still boiling all of your food?
Yeah,
that's good.
Mate, I prefer to call it poached. I say I'm poaching the protein, but for the listeners, we're going back to old school eating where your great grandparents would have eaten, where they eat very basic food so your stomach can digest very easily so we can heal our gut. So that's a good thing. But mate, 6:45 sleeping, kids are over at the in-laws. It was like Christmas, I've got to tell you. Lying there this morning.
But, beautiful.
You can relate, you've got young kids.
I do.
We had a lunch this week, RP Data, CoreLogic RP Data.
Yep.
We've done it for a couple of years now.
We have.
Tim Lawless, who's one of the head researchers there, was talking about, Melbourne. He was in Melbourne.
Yep.
And the state of the property. So there was a few good insights there, yeah?
Yeah, there was. I mean, obviously, when you're looking at macro data, there's some really quite insightful things you can learn from that around supply and demand. And you know, we don't necessarily talk a lot about the macro. We want to get into the micro. We want to get into the markets within markets as opposed to just looking at that broader data. But it's quite good to just sort of touch base on some of those broader things. Days on market, stock on market, rising tide lifting all ships around, different valuations and so forth. So some of those insights were quite good around supply. we're starting to see this story, which we've sort of mentioned in the podcast before, about oversupply in some different types of markets. And that sort of links into a story that came out in the last couple of weeks around some lenders who are putting some restrictions around postcodes because of that oversupply concern.
Yeah, so the blacklist suburbs, so shout out to Sean Steele, who sent it to me via, but sent it to both of us via LinkedIn, this article that appeared in one of the weekend papers. And interestingly, the blacklist suburbs, if you take Victoria, postcode 3000, so inner city suburbs.
Yeah.
But even if you go sort of West Australia, 6000, that's inner city, Queensland, 4000, 2000 for Sydney, there's a common theme here, 5000 in New South Wales. So the capital city postcode
South
is
Australia. 5000. That's
what,
all right.
What did I say?
New South Wales.
Oh,
that's all right.
So, but interestingly, that's just reinforcing what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
So, I guess the overarching thing that Tim was talking about is there's going to be a lot of pain for some of those people that have bought that sort of stock.
Yeah. So some of the stats that came out were interesting. That they're saying around 19% of off the plan purchases, so that's one in five, aren't valing up.
Mm.
So their CoreLogic RP Data owned Valix, which is one of the major valuation firms that supply valuations to bank, and these are bank valuations, but that's one in five at the moment are basically under what the buyer has gone out and paid for these things two or three years ago. So I think that's going to get worse before it gets better. And that's probably the big message. And for those new to the podcast, that's exactly what we've been talking about. So when you get a situation of this oversupply, what you're basically looking at is, you know, the demand's not there. You've been sold on the temptation of the bling. You know, the developer's profits built into that. And if there is, an analogy to use, if there's a type of property that's guaranteed to reduce in value once it's originally bought, a bit like a car driving off the lot, it would have to be off the plan. That's the most probable of properties that you'll get an undervaluation. Second to that is house and land packages. And then if you put mining towns into the mix, well, you've got the perfect combination of disaster.
Isn't mining towns like a perfect cross-section of the state of the Australian...
Oh, apparently 60 Minutes thinks it is, or certainly that hedge fund guy thought it was.
Yeah, it's going to drop 50%, yeah. Interestingly, there was a map that Tim Lawless put up, which was regarding where the concentration of oversupply exists. And do you remember the one we put up for Sydney? It was actually quite dispersed, more out towards Parramatta.
Yeah.
Whereas the one in Sydney, the postcodes, you know, the huge concentration of that oversupply, without a shadow of a doubt, was in that...
in the Melbourne zone?
Yeah.
So think about it. I mean, I think I've said this before in the podcast. If you fly into Sydney, you can drive for 30 minutes and you can see medium and high density accommodation. So it's a mature apartment market. And so what we also learned from the data that Tim shared was that the performances of units in the Sydney market comparative to houses has been pretty good. Whereas if you actually look at the Melbourne and Brisbane and other markets, houses have outperformed units significantly. So Melbourne's got a bit to go in terms of maturity around being happily accepting medium density and high density accommodation. Now, we're tipped to have another 1.3 million people by 2028 in our beautiful city, the most livable city in the world, Melbourne, cultural heart of our country. You can see the bias. But in reality, what we're talking about there is this story that there will be a greater acceptance to apartments. But if you were looking to buy apartments in the Melbourne market now, you would want to be super uber sensitive to the areas that you're buying and the type of properties you're buying, because you know, it's nice to get into a market, but you're going to have a long-term view in terms of that return.
Yeah, and our good friend Peter Kaluzos, the property professor, he always likes to define apartments as two categories. They're either apartments or flats.
Yeah.
Because apartments conjures up the cranes in the sky, the weapons of mass construction, whereas flats conjure up images of old school 1970s. So thanks to him, I've actually changed my dialogue and I tell clients we're buying flats.
Yeah.
Just to really, really strike home the difference in what we're looking for. Because we're still buying apartments/flats for clients here in Melbourne, in beautiful leafy streets, in, you know, next to a beautiful Edwardian, next to a nice cow bung, in, you know, where the street limits are only three levels high. All the stuff we talk about, no pools, no caretakers, and, you know, we're starting to sell like broken records. So we're still buying those, but we are absolutely avoiding the high-rise stuff. And one of the things I always think about is, with apartments, the central 1 kilometre radius, think St Kilda Road, think Docklands just here in Melbourne, think Zetland in New South Sydney, they don't have any constraints on supply because they can go to the moon.
They can keep going higher and higher. And that's that supply story. You can bring on more apartments into a city quicker than you can do anything else in the marketplace. And it probably comes back to something for our newer listeners who haven't been able to go through the catalogue, where we talk about, so does that mean I'm better off buying a house versus better off buying a unit? Well, I would still quite comfortably buy a flat in a great location as opposed to buying what I might feel is great value in a 3 or 4 bedroom McMansion on the fringe of a city because I'm thinking I'm going to get a better return. Well, the stats are in, guys. Globally speaking, Melbourne and Sydney, especially, we're international cities. And so if you look and overlay New York, London, Shanghai, Beijing, Hong Kong, all of those things, Tokyo, et cetera, that even their populace have agreed that they would rather live closer to the action and the amenity and the lifestyle as opposed to being separated out there. And that's, you know, that's my whinge about negative gearing, is that they're trying to implement it on two dud stocks, house and land packages, and high-rise and medium-density accommodation. It doesn't make sense to me.
And that's what gets the most press. I think it's the greatest irony, that statement you talked about before, where people think, I want to buy more land, so I'll buy the house rather than buying a flat. Because if you think about pound for pound, I think I've said this a couple of times, $400,000 flat closer in, $400,000 house and land package further out. A large percentage of my $400,000 on the house and land package goes towards the build, and a small percentage goes towards the land, whereas in close, a very small percentage is going towards the 1970s building, and a very large percentage is going towards the land value. So it's not land content, it's land value. And if you don't understand that one, you will continue to make mistakes.
Yeah, the good old land to asset ratio. There was also, in the last few weeks, have been articles around, you know, unit prices in Melbourne dropping by 40%. Then it was 25%. Then it sort of was 11%. So again, you're going to have noise in the marketplace because that's everyone looking at different data.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have a perfect data set in the property market. In fact, this morning or last night, Domain, the research house there, and obviously the internet provider in terms of search engine portal, have come out and said rents are on the rise, you know, and they're saying that, you know, this is going to continue. But it's like, well, not when a lot of supply starts coming online. So I'm not, you know, of a big believer that we've turned the corner on rental yields at the moment. But it comes back to that point about this sort of noise that comes in, 40% drop in unit prices. Well, that's not the case for some of those, as you say, the villas, the flats, the townhouses and the houses. They're flying ahead in both markets at the moment.
Very good. I think there was a book called Homes in the Sky I read a couple of years ago. It's a really good book. And they said some ratios, 1 in 3, to sort of reinforce your point before, 1 in 3 live in medium density in Sydney, 1 in 4 in Melbourne, 1 in 5 in Brisbane.
Yeah.
So that's 33%, 25% to 20%. So it's a huge difference.
It is. And look, that'll change over time as congestion and people. Yeah. And look, we reach out to developers and say, develop stuff that families want, not stuff that individuals and couples want. Because if you do build 3 and 4 bedroom apartments and you offer them the thing that they need, they may consider it. And that will be the transition that we'll see over the next 15 or 20 years. But, you know, these 2-bedroom homogenous apartments just pushed out of the ground like Legoland, they are absolute crap. And you should never, ever touch them in terms of investment or even owner-occupy.
Very good point. The opening slide for Tim the other day, he always does it. He even said it. He goes, I always put this slide up, but it just goes to show how significant residential real estate is. $6.5 trillion, I think, from memory. It might need a tweak. And about debt of $1.9 trillion. So he said, overall, very healthy LVR at 30%. But he put a footnote in that, saying that across the market, not everyone has a 30% LVR because some people have no mortgage. So he was a little bit worried about the level of household debt, but his comments were that he still sees growth in capital city markets, but he doesn't see the big spikes of growth that we've had in the past, which means, Ben, asset selection becomes uber critical.
Here we go once down again. Drill down from the macro to the micro. So, you know, you see it in our book. It's a nice, clearly laid out thing. Pick your economic activity, your human interest and human behavior stuff. Start at the top. Pick the city that's got the best drivers. Then work into your suburb areas. Work into your owner-occupier appeal. Overlay your buyer's decision quadrant, and you've got a great formula there that's really successful.
That applies in any market. Hey, last week seemed to be a real success. We talked about mindset. We didn't know if our audience would really be open to that, but the feedback's been really great.
Yeah.
So it's obvious that our audience is a really information sponge audience who are keen not only to get property investment ideas, but they're really keen for us to talk about the headwinds that are coming. So we really appreciate a lot of that feedback, and we've been getting some amazing reviews, Ben. I don't really want to sit here and fluff pillows, but I guess the overarching sense of satisfaction for us is that a couple of overarching themes. People are stumbling across the podcast and then just binge catching up.
Which is lovely.
Which is great.
Which obviously there's some content here that makes sense to people, which is always handy.
Which is really great. And the other one we're getting is that people feel like they can now use the frameworks that we're talking about to make better decisions. There's a couple of people that have written in to say, hey, look, I wish I had have heard the frameworks before I bought one.
Yep.
But the positive is my next one's going to be so much better. So that's really cool. But DeJoy had a crack at you, didn't he? He reckons that your Hindi sucks.
my Hindi sign-off, sorry, is... I got to work on that. So sorry for that, DeJoy. But thanks again for the feedback.
Well, DeJoy reminded us there's 1.2 billion people who speak that language, and your French overtoned for Hindi probably wasn't quite...
you know, listeners, just stop me doing this. It's not good for anyone. It's not good for my, you know, for my confidence.
It's not good for your self-esteem. People stop you in the street and go, what are you thinking? Following Collingwood, doing those sign-offs, not liking cricket. You've got a lot going against you, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a born-bred, true-born Australian. Very good. Oh, no, I was just looking at this one here. One of the feedbacks on the mindset one was, and I'm just trying to work out whether it's Leonie or Wally. I think it's Wally. So Wally, you know, made a good point around, you know, he's talking it up and talking about the positive of renting and really confident rent investor. And I will be able to talk hopefully next week around rent investing. You know, the money article, the Money Magazine article that we put together here with the thanks of one of our geniuses in the business, Michael Pope as well, and Bryce and myself collaborated on that, which is a cracking sort of insights into the power of rent investing. But also when you talk to people about it, and this comes onto that mindset thing, he said it was really topical for him because, you know, another guy at the office or someone that he ran into just said, oh, property prices are going to crash by 50%.
Yeah.
Absolutely no basis for his argument. Might have some flimsy idea about debt to debt ratios in Australia, but absolutely clutching at straws. Whereas, so, you know, listen to the podcast. Fundamentals are there, population growth, immigration growth, economic prosperity at the moment, GDP numbers at 3%. That'll soften a little bit, but fundamentally we have to live somewhere. So I don't know how you get a 50% correction in a market. You might get them in a sub-market, i.e. high-rise, high-density, and some outer suburb areas where there's an oversupply as well, but technically not going
to happen. Isn't that the point? When someone comes up to you and says, what do you think about the market? It's like... Okay, we've got some questions. Are you renting? Are you buying for yourself?
Yeah.
Are you investing? Because in places like Moranbah, it could drop 50%. In fact, I think the 60 Minutes story was at 900 val, which is now down at 300. That's more than 50%. So when all we always say is generalized commentary helps no one. You actually taught me this a long time ago.
Yeah.
Generalized commentary helps no one. You're not buying the market. You're buying a property in a localized street in a localized suburb with its own set of micro factors as well. So we don't really get caught up in talking about the market. So those sorts of statements are just, they're emotional statements that aren't Bernard Salt, remember what he said? Whenever I hear noise, I just refer back to the facts.
Yeah.
And he goes,
brilliant.
The, you know, amount of population that people that are coming into these really dense centres,
yeah,
it's impossible for it to drop 50%.
Yeah, yeah. And we've even got stories of, you know, I've got this theory, which is that the past performance is a really good guide in most areas. It doesn't work, obviously, in mining towns and in small communities that suffer from small industry. But when you talk about the big cities and then you talk about the suburbs within those big cities, once they gentrify, they never go backwards. Yeah. You know, so you know, when we are talking about blue chip country, it will always remain blue chip country. When we're talking about areas that are going to gentrify, it doesn't change. And I'm going to be a bit, you know, sort of confrontational here now, but when you've got even mass murderers who are in an area, so take, for example, the Claremont killer. Mm-hmm. He's never been found. I think they know who he is, mm-hmm, but they can't prove it, right? Mm-hmm. But the reality is, has Claremont prices over that time suffered?
No,
it's a beautiful area of Perth. It's gone really well. McDonaldtown, at the turn of the century, McDonaldtown, Alexandria was real blue chip, a railway working yards, and there was a series of murders, you know, in that sort of early 1900s. And so these are the types of things that, now, what's happened there? You know, you can't get any change out of a 1.5 million for houses in those areas now. So the point I'm trying to make there is that even if some might say the commentary that Melbourne prices corrected by 15%, well, if you actually have a look under that data, it's usually that the outer suburbs have gone back, you know, 19-22%, and some of the inner city areas where there might be really high value, you know, that absolute peak market of Toorak and, you know, that top 25% quartile has probably bounced a bit because that's quite volatile. But the fabric median values in those areas are just moving solidly. And look, they don't always perfectly go up, but that's, you know, property's a long-term investment. And if you think fundamentally, there's more people that want to live closer for those convenience lifestyle drivers, that human interest, human behaviour stuff we talk about.
Mate, yeah, no, really good insights you gave there, Ben. Even you talked about the murders and how that has a short-term impact, but maybe long-term not fun.
Yep.
Think about the floods in Brizzy.
Perfect.
You know, Hawthorne, Bulimba, they went underwater, parts of that went underwater, but it was 37 years, quick maths between...
77 to 2011.
37 years. So people have short memories because people are still buying now. I personally, if it's been under either of those two floods, I won't buy in Brisbane, no matter how good it is.
Spending other people's money. You personally might buy it, you know, and I personally might buy it, but that's, yeah, you go.
I've got a mate in Brisbane who bought a house in Indooroopilly and it was up to the roof in water. And he just said, well, it's going to take 37 years on average because it's not a 1 in 100 year flood. It's a 1% chance of it happening every year.
Yep.
And he just said, look, I'm going to roll the dice. So he went in, he bought an $800,000 house for $350,000. He spent $150,000 on doing it up. And now he lives in an awesome property. And even though the banks have some sort of nerves around the LVRs on it, he's you know, batting out of his price division because of that event. So that's almost the same as the murder. So historical precedent is the point here.
Yeah, I think there's another point that it sort of just come to my mind when you're talking about that, is that there can be exceptions to rules. Mm. Now, we have a blanket rule for our clients when we're spending their money not to buy in flood zones. I mean, but the example is your mate did it. Other examples are there may be a medium and a high density accommodation block that actually makes sense to invest in.
Mm.
You know, it could have uninterrupted views of the harbour, like the coat hanger is a perfect example. Where it's, you know, that, well, what do they call it? The one in just off Darling Harbour there, the toaster, I think they call the building. And it, on one side, it's got amazing views of the Opera House, and the other side, it's got a coat. So it'll never be built out. Right on the point there, that is a cracking, you know, medium density to high density accommodation. Brilliant.
Mm.
And that will perform like no tomorrow, because there will be international people who arrive in Australia as immigrants who say, I'm well cashed up. This $2.5 million apartment makes perfect sense to me. So again, there are exceptions to the rule. We can't look at every 9.6 million dwellings and basically tell you every one of them. My dream one day, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
My dream one day is I will build a research platform that will rank every property in Australia.
Ooh.
That's my dream. So you've heard it first on the podcast.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's part of what I want to do. So not only will we rate suburbs, but we'll actually rate every property. And technology is going to allow us to do that. Automated imagery, automated judgment of that imagery, historical price performances, those types of things are going to be where we want to head. So, you know, that's where either I'll build it or someone else will, because I know it's going
to
come.
Knowing you as well as I know it'll be you. You'll bring it to market. You'll be really passionate about it. And I think someone's bringing an index on brand new stock to rate. I think CoreLogic.
Yeah, they have that in the States already. So they use in their sort of all around America, and they're quite advanced in their data over there, CoreLogic. Check them out. I mean, this is a $1.8 billion data and analytics company. They're the number one provider of data and analytics in Australia when it comes to property and finance. There's that, and they have a rating system on high-rise apartments, and they're looking to sort of bring that in, because like them, they don't like to see mum and dad Australians losing money on buying these types of properties. And we had a bit of an open chat about that at the lunch, where we talked about, so who are these people buying all these apartments in Melbourne? And we absolutely know it's foreign money coming in, around sort of 20 to 25%, we think, based on the NAB data. But who else is buying it? Well, I actually put some input into that conversation. I said, you know who I think it is? I think it's mum and dad investors from interstate, because there's classic cases of Victorians back in the early 2000s buying, you know, high-rise apartments on the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast. And I think that's how they do it. They go along to these seminars and these workshops, and they never know. It's not their own backyard, so they don't really know what's happening on a day-to-day basis there. So they just believe in the marketing spin that gets presented by these very sophisticated sales teams, and away they go in terms of, you know, so they go and invest. And I remember back in 2004, 2005 here in Melbourne, there was a particular high-rise apartment. We had nothing to do with it in regards to, we didn't recommend it, but we got some inquiry from a lot of people who had bought out of Sydney because it valued up $80,000 less than they paid for it. So they paid $580,000 for it, and these units were valuing up at $500,000. And so the real challenge for them was, how do they get finance if they didn't have the equity already? So, and these were all interstate investors buying in a city they don't understand. So just a real tip for the novice investor is, these people are selling you something. They're selling off a stock list. Of course, it's going to look amazing and look great, and they're going to talk about all the positives, but not necessarily the negatives. So get some independence, get an independent valuation. You know, go and speak to a buyer's agent who knows that market or has some detailed research that's independent of them trying to sell you something.
Yeah, very good point, Ben. On Facebook, we had Jack Kiley send us a quick note, and he said, look, you know, love the podcast. Thanks for all your help. Recently, I've joined, and he's named the group. I'm not going to name them, but it's a property group.
Yep.
And I've attended their meetings, and I'm curious of your opinion on them. So we're not going to name and shame, but they say they mainly buy new apartments to achieve maximum depreciation. When I first heard it, raised a red flag for me, because that goes against everything I've learned of what you guys have taught me. What are your thoughts? Our thoughts are, overlay the principles that we've been talking about to the product that they're talking about and see if it makes sense.
Yeah, look, that's totally... I mean, think about this. Depreciation is a write-off of your asset. It's a write-off. It's the diminishing the value of the asset. So why would I go and invest in something that is going to run at a loss, or help me, I suppose, from a short-term perspective in terms of tax return? I want to buy a premium grade, investment grade asset, you know, and I want it to appreciate in value. If I get a little bit of depreciation bonus, and, you know, in all of the models and the advisory and the strategy work that we do, we don't even factor it in. So if it's in that particular property, that's a bonus.
It's a massive.
You know, so in terms of, we're looking at the asset to stand on its merits of owner-occupier appeal, investment grade, human interest, human behaviour, and the broader economic drivers that are going to push that asset forward. It makes no sense to me, and a great red flag to that listener in terms of what he was saying. What's his name?
Jack,
thanks for reaching out to us, because you're helping everyone else understand this. I mean, if my biggest selling points are depreciation and negative gearing, run a mile. You know, why would I want to buy something that runs at a loss? on the off chance that it might grow in value, because I want to save, you know, 50 cents or 30 cents or 40 cents in every dollar that I earn.
I've got a deal for you, Ben.
Do it.
Can you give me $100?
Sure.
And I'll give you $30 in return.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it?
It's not a good deal, is it? that's what depreciation is. You spend a dollar, I'll give you 30 cents back.
Yeah.
So the underlying performance of the asset has to perform, because that that deal doesn't perform. You're only doing that as a cash flow injection on the top. And as you said in our plans, we don't even put it into the mix.
No. So investment grade, think about it sensibly, execute on the ABCD, asset selection, borrowing power, cash flow management and defence. Mm. Get those things right and you're on your pathway to a wealthier tomorrow.
There you go, folks. Another piece of wisdom there from the Property Investment Advisor of the Year for the last 2 years. Hey, a couple of things, Ben, as we sign off. We had a snowboarder send us a photo of himself, and he's put his smartphone up. I'll show you. You haven't actually seen it.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. There, yeah, okay.
So he's in Slovenia. His name's Cameron. And he goes, it may be hard to spot, but I'd like to say thanks to you guys for all your information on the podcast. This is me listening along while snowboarding in Vogel Ski Resort, Slovenia. How good is that?
That is cool. we're international. Yeah. That is cool. So
here we are thinking that we're just banging on, rabbiting about a few things, and there's someone in Slovenia who's snowboarding, listening to these principles. We should maybe give him some snowboarding tips. What do you reckon?
Well, I want more tips around the skiing. That lifestyle,
yeah.
No, I want the skiing. Yeah, I'm a bit of a skier, so Cam, reach out to me and let me know.
You can ski. You got old man's back.
I went to Japan and skied recently, so I still have old man's back. Won't stop me from skiing.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cam, reach out to me. I want to know all about the skiing over there. Maybe I'll give it a go in a couple of years.
Yeah, no.
Maybe we can go skiing together if you come back to Australia.
Yeah.
I'm not a snowboarder. I'm a skier.
Yeah. No, we'd love to join you, Cameron. Write in. Let us know if that was a holiday or if you're just vagabonding around the world, just enjoying life.
Good on you, mate.
Yeah, very good. The other thing is, there's a 3-month feature coming up for the Money Magazine, all about property. So,
wow.
Our listeners should keep an ear out for that, because you and I feature quite heavily in it. We're fortunate to be asked to contribute. So that'll hit the... If it's not on the stands now, it'll be very, very soon. So.
And the current API magazine, I talk about my $500,000 mistake.
Really?
So check that out. Education comes in all forms. We're just one of those forms. You know, I've been reading API magazine since, I think, 1998 when it first came out. Mm. I'm still learning. You know, I'm a student of investing. I'm a student of life. So from that point of view, continually keep learning.
Mate, $500,000 mistake. Maybe I'll cancel that $100, $30 thing, mate. Yeah. I can afford it. So, very good, listeners. There you go. So, mate, we are going to sign off around the world somewhere today.
Oh.
And you've actually recruited some help on this, on how you can...
Yeah, but that doesn't make it any easier. It just makes people laugh.
Yeah.
We've got a beautiful intern who's joined us for a few weeks. And she's sitting in the background listening to us record this podcast.
So this is a live podcast, isn't it? This is a studio audience.
So her name's Ayanda, and she's originally from Africa, South Africa. And so I said, well, maybe I'll sign off and a goodbye in Zulu.
Yeah.
So here I go.
Here we go, folks. Pick up your croissants. It's about to be in a French overtone. So here we go. Come on, Ben.
Hambani Kahol. Kahli.
Kahli. Oh. She's laughing at you.
Now I've got the thumbs up. Kaheli.
Yeah, no, I think that was just a mercy rule. Hambani
Kaheli. I'm still going Hambali. Hambani Kaheli.
There we go, folks. Ben in Zulu. Hambani Kaheli.
Yeah, that'll do. We're getting a nod. She goes straight away. Bryce gets it. I'm back to this classroom.
So there you have it, folks. Hopefully that's given you a bit of insights. Thanks for all your feedback. We love the reviews. If you get a chance to go onto our social media, or if you get a chance to go on and give us a review, what happens is it means our reviews are pretty cool. And if we get more 5 stars, it'll mean it'll pop up on more people's search functions when they do a podcast and they can listen to more.
I'd love to see. Let's get to 100 reviews. What are we at?
85
on iTunes.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to get to 100 by the end of the month.
Okay.
End of the month.
Putting it out there.
We
ask a favour.
Well,
everyone.
You know, it's a pay it forward. If you like the podcast, give us a review.
Give us a review.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And Ben, 250,000 downloads.
Quarter of a mil.
Quarter of a mil.
Wow. Wow. So thank you for everyone who's listening. Yeah. That's really, really nice.
There you go, folks. Until next week, Hamba Kahele.
There we go. See, I'm going to give this to Bryce from now on.
See you, folks.